Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Every character in this book has a motivation or a hidden motivation that we don't know about yet. He's a fantastic plotter. Highly recommend this book. I have not found a book, Rich.
Even better.
No, Rich, I've not found a book that sparked me like this in a long time. You've had me reading Wheel of Time bullshit. I'm sorry. I just have to throw a dig.
We always got it.
Just once. I know it gets for cliche, but still, I have not had that spark again, and I have the spark. I can thank this man because this book brought back the... This is why I love fantasy. This is why I love books. Thank you sincerely. You let me escape. You let me forget. I love this book. Welcome back, everybody, to the Tudor Ramble episode. I am one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And we... Together, you can join me, Rich.
Yep.
We love it.
This book.
Woo! I love it a little bit more.
But I love it quite a bit. This is a fun book.
We're going to go 10 to 15 minutes of spoiler-free first for The Will of the Many. Then we'll get into spoilers. We will warn everybody. It has been months and months and months since I have found a book that has reinvigorated my spark and love for reading. And I can thank James. Is it Islington or Islington?
I believe it's Islington.
Islington.
But I could very well be wrong.
I can thank this man because this book brought back... This is why I love fantasy. This is why I love books. Thank you sincerely. You let me escape. You let me forget. I love this book.
FYI, before Austin read this book, I told him, hey, by the way, this book is fantasy version of Red Rising. Do with that what you will. I was very accurate in that I knew you were going to love this book.
And I hope even people that weren't the biggest fan of Red Rising, this allows for some people to also like this book.
Oh, no, yeah.
This has a wider audience.
I completely agree. We're going to talk about that, but like it does, it captures that thing that Red Rising really does well. A bunch of story tropes that it does, and I think it builds on it and makes it a bit more juicy.
Juicy, yeah.
The plot is a bit more juicy than Red Rising.
It's way more complex. There's a lot more moving parts. It feels more epic in a way. Mm-hmm. The reason you say it's like Red Rising is if you're going in to read this book and you're trying to be convinced, it is Roman inspired. There's a lot of Roman shit. There's a lot Roman, of Roman stuff. So if you don't like Rome for some weird reason, Rome's cool.
Rome is cool.
Rich, you know Rome's cool.
I mean, how often do you think about the fall of the Roman Empire?
I just think this is literally my Roman Empire.
Yeah.
My Roman Empire is the will of the many.
See,
now.
I don't think about the fall of the Roman Empire. I think about the rise of the new Roman Empire.
When Julius Caesar destroyed democracy.
A great day. A great day in history.
Mm, and this book has a lot to say about democracy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. This book does say democracy is cringe.
Mm.
Quoted. 100%. Go and prove me wrong. Go find it. Go read the book and prove me wrong.
It's very Roman inspired, and there's elements of the trope is an academia trope. So yep.
Fantasy, academia.
Think Hogwarts.
Right. Basically.
Think Hogwarts with a very more epic scaled fantasy book, Roman inspired. And could you add another layer onto that of what else could you give with it being spoiler-free? What could they expect going in?
A lot of playing multiple sides. You have a main character that is basically, because they are hiding their identity, they have to pretend to be one person in one situation and another somewhere else. Multiple factions pulling at them, exactly. Strings, kind of like a little bit Lies of Locke Lamora of having to play every side. A little bit of that, while basically trying to play for your own team.
Mm-hmm. It has that, though, secret royalty, secret heir kind of trope.
Yeah.
Where this, our main character, has
this is chapter one. Chapter stuff. One.
Yeah, spoiler free. And like, this is your intro to the book. Is this is our main character and his father, his family, and old kingdom all dead, all killed off right from the get-go. And our main character, Viss, doesn't want to fight back the kingdom and the hierarchy, the system that killed his family, because the revolt, the people going against and avenging his family, is just as bad as the system, because both the ones rising up and trying to fight the system and the system itself are both immoral and there's both problems. So our main character, Viss, just wants to get the fuck out. He wants to leave. And it's such a compelling way to have a main character who is passive. And you see where that goes and is layered throughout the book, where people are pulling at him. And there's so every character in this book has a motivation or a hidden motivation that we don't know about yet. He does a great job. He's a fantastic plotter. Highly recommend this book. I have not found a book, Rich.
Even better.
No, Rich, I've not found a book that sparked me like this in a long time. You've had me reading Wheel of Time bullshit. I'm sorry. I just have to throw a thing.
But we always got it.
Just once. I know it gets for cliche, but still, I have not had that spark again, and I have the spark.
I'm so happy.
I'm sparked.
I'm sad that Dungeon Crawler Carl didn't spark you as well, but you know.
No, I really enjoy that. It's a nice comfort read, but it doesn't, you know, the spark is different than fun.
Okay.
Were you going to say something before I got all into myself? Yeah, go ahead.
I was. I lost my train of thought. Well, basically, the Will of the Many, why I have a lot of trust in it. So book one for me is a great introduction, great book one. However, I have read his previous series, the Lycanus trilogy, book three being one of top tier books, one of the best plots I've ever read. It was such a fantastic conclusion where I trust this man. I know he can plot a damn good story and that all the pieces are going to come together in a very satisfying way. And most of the people, you catch some things of where they're going to go, but there's enough twists in there that you won't see coming that it's so satisfying.
And that was his first trilogy, Lycanus trilogy.
Exactly.
Which you'd say the first book in that series, not the best, right?
First book's a little rough.
It gets better. And by the
second book's better. Third book is amazing. And so because I trust him, I am so excited for the continuation of this series because I know it's going to go somewhere amazing.
That's very well put. And you'd say his book one here compared to his book one of Lycanus trilogy.
Way better.
Significantly better.
Oh, way better. He has improved greatly. You can tell.
That's awesome.
He learned book to book of his prose vastly improves, dialogue. I think that was his biggest problem in Lycanus trilogy is mostly the prose and the characters were a little weak.
It's much stronger here.
Oh, way stronger. He has very good prose in this book. I'm really impressed.
Awesome. And we are not the only ones to say this. If you don't want to just listen to us, I found Patrick Leo, fantastic booktuber, and Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews, who's on the channel, fantastic book reviewer. Both give this a 5 out of 5 stars, if that tells you anything. They love this book. And I was looking at the reviews. They were gushing about this so much. This came out in 2023. It's a relatively new book. And the second, it will be a trilogy, I believe. And the second book in this hierarchy series is what it's called, is coming out 24 or 25. Looks like probably 25.
It looks like the plan originally was going to be around December 2024, but
then God Emperor Sanderson
decided to release Stormlight 5 then. So
no books competing with Stormlight 5.
Nobody wants to compete with Stormlight 5. I think he's pushing it back a month or two.
Definitely. And we talked about this book in our monthly book club on our Patreon, in our Discord, link in the description below. We were talking
if you want to talk with us, an exclusive Discord where we chat about books. We have our book clubs. It's a ton of fun. Check it out.
And when we were chatting with everybody, we had a lot of love for this book. And Nace loved it just as much as I did. I had an ally. And you too.
Are allies. But we are complete allies.
Good. Yes.
I love this book. It's great.
Energy. Let's go. And then Jai Sedai also loved the book. Avery really enjoyed the book. We had Beatrice liked it, but then we had one naysayer, Levy. Shame on you, Levy.
Levy doesn't like books.
Levy's a let Levy down. Oh, God. Oh. Okay, and also, if you want to check out, if we convinced you or you'd want to read this book, we have an affiliate link in the description below. If you want to also support us while getting the book at the same time, we'll always have affiliate links down there now. Helps out. Yep. So that is more. Before we get into spoiler stuff, we need to get into our spoiler-free rating.
Sure.
This book.
I'll go first.
Yes, please.
Overall, with the official Richard Rambler rating, I gave a 4.25, meaning I think it was really great. That's my rating.
You know what? I was going to complain, but you put a lot of emphasis into the really great, and I appreciate how much energy you put into that.
Okay.
Because you could have said 4.25, it's really great. Those are two different ratings. If you say it's a 4.25, it's really great.
I'm sticking to my rating system.
Yes.
We figured it out.
Precisely.
See, really great, that tone is good.
Good. Yes, that's a 3.5.
That's a 3.5 tone.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. That's really good.
Then I got a...
really great. That's really great. See, I'm getting it.
Good. I'm going to have to put a fire under my ass because of the rating I gave this. Okay. I gave this a 4.5 out of 5 stars, meaning this was spectacular. I loved this book so much. I enjoyed my time. We're nearly there. I love this book. Okay, to keep spoiler free of why you love this book so much, why it was really great for you, what do you think the best category or categories were, or the best elements, and then maybe what some of the worst ones were?
The best was plot. I think, for me, I think it's pretty obvious that the plot was spectacular. Other than that, I'd say emotional impact is definitely up there because he gets you with those twists and turns. There's some real emotional moments, surprising moments that kind of threw me off guard. Like I had a couple moments where I was out loud, like, wow, what the hell happened there?
Right.
So that, and I think the thought provokingness, I think it has something to say, and more so it's a good introduction. I'm looking forward to the questions it poses and how it will be answered later in the series.
Very fair.
But it does posit some interesting questions.
Very fair. Yeah, I would say for this book, plot is the best part about it. If you're a plot reader, you'll love this. I would describe this book as the opposite of Dune's plot, where in Dune, every single character, you know exactly what every character's think because Frank Herbert brings you into their mind and basically says, well, this character's killing everybody. Okay. So nothing's hidden. We know what every character thinks. In The Will of the Many, it's a first-person point of view from Viss, and you have nothing on any of the characters, and they all have hidden motivations. And
barely even Viss.
Not even Viss. That's one. We don't even know what Viss is thinking. So that's the opposite of doing that regard. Fantastic plot. The lower category, I mean, it's not doing anything crazy with prose. It's good prose, but that's... Yeah. Nothing else great. I think all the other categories just spectacular. So we got to get into spoilers, Rich.
Yep.
You ready?
Time to tune off if you haven't read the book already or you don't care about spoilers, the monster you are. So
we will give. We're doing our best to give context for those who continue on if you do listen and don't care about spoilers. So we'll try to give context in the scenes.
Yeah.
Go from there. Spoiler warning. We're going. You ready, Rich?
Yep.
Okay. First category, emotional impact. What did you give this out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 4 out of 10. I thought it was great.
4 out of 10.
Sorry, 4 out of 5.
Oh my God. You that would have been a little ironic.
Yeah. Just,
I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Spectacular. Love this. Really emotionally connected with me. Why the 4? We can now get spoilery about it. So basically saying what we were before, but get more detail. Why the 4? What moments hit for you?
So
also, what emotion did you feel? What was it going for and why did it hit that way?
Sure. I think mostly it was going for a lot of shock moments. There are plenty of scenes set up where to big twists. I think probably one of the most surprising scenes was the Colosseum massacre scene. That was definitely the one that threw me for a loop the most.
And by the way, this is in part one.
This is part one. And you start reading like
of a 3-part book.
The mass Viz going into the Colosseum going like, okay, I'm going to have to meet with this other person secretly. I'm going to figure out a way to get out of this cute meeting and meet this terrorist lady. Okay.
Terrorist lady? What a kind way to call a terrorist.
Terrorist lady.
She's the terrorist darling.
And then goes meets with the terrorist, and then goes sits back down in their seat, and that same terrorist group starts massacring thousands thousands of people, traps them, use some weird magic system, and starts wiping the entire audience of the Colosseum out. And Viz basically having to escape, then goes back and uses a device that the terrorist gave him to actually kill the lead terrorist, his old friend, and then becomes one of the heroes of the Empire. Oh boy.
Right?
This was a scene that is the end of several books.
Yeah.
Like this is a climax for many books, and this was the end of part one.
Mm-hmm. No, I think there's some more chapters in part one. It was like toward the end of part
toward
one.
Toward the end.
And the way you just put it, where then he was the hero of the Empire, the tension that you feel and the mystery of this book, a couple things that emotionally pulled me really well, was after that Colosseum scene, and for the rest of the book, you see, okay, the citizens love him because he saved the day. The military in this world kind of need to use him to figure out, wait, what'd you just figure out about this, how they kill that many people? And they see him as a little bit of a mistrustful threat. They're mistrustful very much. And then the terrorist group, the heads of the terrorist group. So you're Osama bin Laden. I've used this when we were talking to the Patreon book club. I was like, okay, imagine this. You're Osama bin Laden loves you because they're using you against the Empire. But the terrorists, all of Al-Qaeda, below Osama, hates you because they saw you kill their leader. So the head of the terrorist group is using you.
And likes you somewhat.
And the rest of the cannon fodder hates you and is trying to kill you. The military is all these pressures that's put on him. And then at the same time, you have Ulusor, the mentor character that you'd put in this place, who's using him to get back at revenge for his brother's death.
Yeah.
And so he's being pulled in all these directions, and you get the two main things this does emotionally for me is, one, it unveils the motivations behind everybody, and two, exactly what you said with the Colosseum scene, is it constantly increases the stake of the story. At first, you think it's a story about, okay, finding out the mystery about Ulusor's dead brother. Did he commit suicide?
Yeah.
What's going on there? And then the next layer is, wait a second, no, this is about a whole revolution that's going on between the old and the new.
And then it builds, oh no, now it's not about a revolution. It's actually about this apocalyptic event through the magic system of whatever you have here.
The cataclysm. Like, holy shit. So all this is going on. It's just incredibly done. And that Colosseum scene for you hit the most. Did any other part after that, did it connect super well for you? Or was that the peak of the book for you?
It may have been the peak, but some other scenes came close that I was really into it, especially the surprising scene of Viz coming up with the plan to get back to the school early, that he's on vacation and he has to come up with some plan to investigate this ruins area for his adoptive father. And basically adoptive father saying, like, hey, if you don't, I'm gonna basically gonna kill you.
Yeah, right.
Figure it out. And he's like, but I don't know how. They lock that place down tight when their school is like, figure it out.
Do it.
And so he goes,
poke
the bear. And so he figures out a way to, like, he sneaks back into the school during the vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And then sneaks back out, then comes back again. A really cool infiltration scene and shows how pressed against the wall he is.
Brian uses those terra vest things, whatever those were.
Probably our most direct connection with Viz using the magic system.
Yes.
Because he's very much removed from all of the magic, because he morally objects to the use of using other people's will as a power source.
Yes. Which I thought was fascinating the way to present it. Yeah, I love that scene. And for me, the push and pull of this book, where in that scene where you think he's, oh, is he going to make it out? Kind of that tension. What he does really well in those other scenes are a mini example of this is with him and his buddy Eden, E-I-D-H-I-N, I think is how it was in the book. But him and his buddy, the guy he punched at first in the book. So him and his buddy here, well, before they were buddies, they were going on their arc of becoming friends, and they have to do this labyrinth together. They have to solve this maze. And just a way of how James Islington emotionally plays with you is he sets up the Labyrinth games, and he has our main character, Viss, go into the Labyrinth with all the classmates watching around, and we're watching our protag, and he does better than others. But hey, no joke, when we get into the characters, we'll talk about Viss, but he goes, gets two-thirds the way, but fails. Oh, he didn't make it. But then he gets out, and his partner, Eden, has to go through the maze, and Viss is helping him by changing the things in the maze, changing the walls to help him and block from the hunters getting him. And so the way that happens, for those who didn't read the book, is they know the same language that other people don't. It's not common tongue language, but they share the same language.
So they're able to cooperate without other people hearing their plan.
Exactly. So they beat the Labyrinth the first time trying without any of the other students doing so. So it was like a huge surprise. And then they are about to celebrate their victory, but then the professor goes, well, you use a different language, that's cheating. So it's a smaller example of how he gives you a loss. He didn't win. Oh, we did win. Oh, but didn't win. But then you make a baby step toward...
He made a friend.
Exactly.
Now they each have something in common.
Yes.
And a little gives each of them a piece of home and a reminder that they're not alone in this foreign hostile empire.
Exactly. And
but we're talking a lot about the plot for emotional impact. Overall, that does summarize a lot of this, a lot of what I feel about it, because the characters I think are good, but not amazing. Like I like Viz.
Oh, we can get in the character section, but yeah, sure. We'll do. I just want to mention one more thing with emotion.
Sure.
Because when a book gets me to shout out loud,
where did you shout
fuck
out loud?
Yeah, like I shouted out loud. I am such a simpleton when it comes to these dark academia, like powerful protagonist types, where he is fighting, I believe his name was Indoor. He was fighting him in the battle when he was in class 6 to go on to class 5. He was fighting that kid who was seen as like the best duelist. And we have Viz going to fight him. And I won't say another series that does this. One of my favorite series that you kind of see, where in the duel, he's the underdog. He's supposed to lose against this guy, but he's actually winning. Turns out his opponent, the other kid who's supposed to win, is cheating. So now I'm sitting there all frustrated, like, he's cheating. That's not fair. That's not fair. And then our main character, Viss, after he figures out he's cheating, he just says, fuck this. And he basically just rampages his head and goes, bam! 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 Till he bleeds and dies! He doesn't actually die, but kills! So our main character just does this, goes to the professor who was helping the kid cheat, and just says, I'll be accepting my upgrade to the next class now, bitch. And then walks away. Just that adrenaline rush, it's so cathartic, and I love it.
For over a year, I've been trying to get you to read Rage of Dragons.
Oh, I will love that book.
That's the entire book. The entire book is that. That's all it is.
I know what my next read is.
It's the entire book.
I love that shit.
It's literally fight to fight of like underdog protagonist going against other guy who's like cheating. And you're like, no. We're just like, yeah, get him.
Okay, I'm going to give that
a
5.
The entire book.
I'm going to love that.
The whole thing.
Thank you. I'm now so excited. Okay, we can go on to thought-provokiness.
Yeah.
I just had to get that out. Thought-provokiness, what did you give it out of 5 stars?
I was thoroughly surprised. I gave it a 3.75. So I thought this actually was really good. I'm not giving it higher because kind of it planted the seeds, and I'm waiting for it to kind of blossom later down in the series.
Yeah, I could change this. I could be convinced to lower this and change it in retrospect to the series. It just really impressed me. I gave this a 4.5.
Oh, wow.
With a spectacular thought-provokingness, because after our book club discussion, I swear I'm not saying book club just to get you guys to join it constantly. It's just, we had a really long discussion about this book.
How long was that, like 4 hours?
No, 3.
It
was
3
like
hours. 3.
Because we recorded, but then also had the, we talked after and before. I think it was roughly 3 hours. But the more we talked about with other people, I had it lower at first. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm thinking more about the book, it's sticking with me. And bear in mind, I finished this a couple days ago, so the thought-provokingness is something that is more likely to change over time, because you'll think back to what books actually stick with you.
Sure.
But why'd you give it very good? What impressed you about it? Because I'll clearly agree with what you're about to say if you have good things to say. So,
the chief point that I think this book is trying to get you to think about is, in an oppressive regime, how culpable are the average citizens of it. So they're not the leaders, they're just the regular people. But from the occupied point of view is that the oppressors are only able to have their power by the common people supporting them. And so they are just as culpable. And which ultimately leads to why are the terrorists bad? Oh, I don't know, maybe they massacre a bunch of innocent civilians. Kind of makes it easy on who's the bad guy. But in this series, it actually is a little bit more direct of the magic systems based where the upper echelon of society literally gains physical magical power by the lower peasant class giving them their strength, their willpower to the upper class. And so from the terrorist point of view, hey, how do you take the power away from the upper class? You kill their source of power, the peasants. Technically effective. It actually works in the the whole Colosseum massacre was not just to kill civilians. Basically, the upper echelon actually felt a huge blow. A lot of the generals and a bunch of people were severely hurt by the backlash of losing like half of their power.
They literally fainted or passed out because they lost their connections in the pyramid.
Yeah. And yeah, so that is an interesting question to posit. Like, it's not saying, oh, maybe it's actually good. It's not what it's saying. But it is showing, like, what level of responsibility do a group of people have to policing their own society? Right. So, like, of course, I mean, I know I'm making this simple point and mm-hmm. like, oh, talk about Nazi Germany again. It's like, how responsible are the German civilians that lived around Auschwitz? How responsible are they for Auschwitz and concentration camps in general? I wouldn't say they're as responsible as, say, the SS, but there is some responsibility of you've done nothing, you've said nothing, like you see these people going into camps, like they know.
Right.
They
know what's happening. How complicit are you in the atrocity by either turning a blind side or supporting it in a very distant way?
Mm-hmm.
Because here's a modern example we could use of how complicit are we in child labor factories for having iPhones?
Oh, true. Right?
Like take it to that level of how removed are you, how close do you get to where you are a culprit of it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very interesting question to ask.
I think the better question about this is the terrorists are clear in this book are clearly going too far because obviously they're evil, but they have their incorrect solution to it is based on a legitimate problem of the people do have some level of responsibility. They are culpable to some degree. Doesn't mean you should kill them all, but how much do you get to judge them?
How much do you get to judge? And hey, I don't know. Like, I didn't look into the iPhone thing. I don't know if there's actual child labor. Like, but whatever that equivalent is, like Nike had a lot of issues where Nike was using more ways to get there. So it's how complicit are you, but with how far removed you are? Is ignorance an excuse? Or in this society, even more specifically, they're not ignorant to it. They are literally bolstering up and participating actively.
Now,
in this.
They are forced to participate. That's an additional thing. They're not just willingly. It's forced upon them, but other people have refused.
Mm-hmm. And like our main character, Viss.
No, our main character has refused, but severely punished.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the book is going to take this, but I think it's going to be very interesting.
I do too. That's one huge thing that just has me thinking about. It doesn't present an answer, but here's the thing. With a lot of thought-provoking books will end without giving an answer, but mm-hmm. they'll make you have a strong way of thinking either way, that either way. And the way this book end has me going like, oh, I don't know which way this could go right now. And the fact that this is like the protagonist in Casablanca in many ways, where in Casablanca, Rick is, and hey, it's a 1942 movie. I'm going to spoil it. Sorry.
Cutoff date was
2023 was the cutoff date.
Yeah.
You've had enough. You get, what is that, 70-something years? So in Casablanca, the main character, Rick, is working the bar Casablanca. His bar, there's music there. And he is staying out of the war between America, Nazi Germany. He's staying out of World War II, and he's just there letting he wants to stay passive. He wants to play Switzerland in a way. And throughout the plot, it's just he's getting pulled in these directions, and by the end actually actively goes and quote-unquote helps America, like helps the escape of... Anyways, in Casablanca, thing is, he ends up deciding in the end he's not going to stay passive. In this book, this is equally passive of not wanting to choose to take over the hierarchy that's destroying the system, because he also sees that the terrorist group there is also doing things just as bad. So it's not as simple as Axis versus allies. Mm-hmm. It's Axis versus Axis. And who do you choose? And so the end of this book, at least, with that, the message of this, he kind of says, throws up the middle finger to all the religion, the government, the military, Ulusor, all the people that were pushing
all,
him.
All of his puppet masters.
All the puppet masters. And he says, you know what? Screw you, Geppetto. And he decides to be a censor, just goes the path he wants to, which, where is that going to lead book two? I don't know, but it's an interesting thing to pause. Like, if they're, all the sides are bad, can you forge your own path? I don't know. We'll see.
Which, it makes him a far more interesting character, and where I'm hoping he will go, because you want to move into anything else for thought-provokingness on this one?
That covered a lot of it. Last thing I had was the everybody... the theme of betrayal and hidden motivation is something that I will look at in future books. And because of this book, I will start to think like, hey, I expect more now, because this set a standard for me. Mm. So that's something else I want to put in the themes of it. Like, I like that betrayal. That's all. That's the last thing I want to mention.
Maybe not even betrayal, but everyone has their own motive.
Yes.
And sometimes those motives can go together or not.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we can go on to characters if you'd like.
Yeah. This kind of wraps into it, talking about Viz. I gave this a 3.5 out of 5. I thought the characters were good. But
I
would have actually been more neutral if not for all the side characters.
Okay.
That's the thing. I think the side characters really bolster this, where I was most disappointed in Viz. I did not have an emotional connection to him nearly at all. To me, it the focus of the book is a strong protagonist that is being pulled in multiple directions and cannot figure out his own path. Completely get it. It's not a power progression. It's not about him self-developing in like physically. It's about him developing mentally and actually figuring out the direction he wants to lead his life and to cut the strings of his puppet masters. Completely get that. However, it did several times felt a little bit Gary Stewish, of something comes up and then, haha, surprise, the secret prince is actually great at everything. And it's not that it was established that he's great at all these things. It's more of the thing comes up and then he kicks ass and he goes, well, actually, I've been studying this because I was a prince. And just like kind of the explanation every time, or you're supposed to be shocked of, oh no, he's going up against the best duelist. Haha, psych. Actually, Viz is the best duelist because he studied as a prince. And like, oh no, he's going up against a great board game chess equivalent master, all this stuff. Well, actually, Viz created the game.
I will say,
you start going, I get it.
I disagree, of course. I gave characters a 4.5, a spectacular. Okay. And I will even agree with like the Viz. If I was super into Viz, like extremely, it might have been a 5 for me. It's just, I get the Viz point. We talked about this a lot in book club, but the point on Viz with when it was going into those situations, whether it was the foundation game or the fight against Endor and the duelist, the interesting part for me wasn't like I knew he was gonna accomplish these things guaranteed, like I knew he was gonna get through every step. The cool thing for me was how. So when he was winning in the duel, the thing for me wasn't like, oh, he actually won. It was him smashing his helmet and going to him and letting that anger out and just going, fuck you. And seeing how he did that, or the foundation play. What was cool about the foundation game was how it wasn't just him. It was him giving the deal to her, saying, hey, I'll give you an out if you go get these documents for my buddy, Caden. Oh, I forget. It's so many names.
Too many names.
Wait, I have it here. Calidus. So get the documents for Calidus. So Belly said, he promises, I'll resign the game if you just go get the papers for Calidus. And she does. She comes back with the papers. He says, I'm going to beat you anyways. basically learning the system of the Will of the Many, of that. That's what they're teaching you to do in this system, in this hierarchy. So I
backstab, betrayal, claw your way to the top.
Exactly. Yeah. So for I could see from your perspective how this pro tagging, Gary stewing, like good at everything. For me, it's I use this example in the book club too. It's like a Superman character of like, I'm not looking for him to be challenged physically or challenged by the foundation game or by the duel. I'm looking for him to go from passivity into an active character. And what's his decision there over the time? And for me, I also, you know, one of those tropes you love, the retired badass. The retired badass is secretly great at everything because he was the dog back in the day. Like he's bringing back his kind of sportiness.
Here's the thing with the retired badass. Normally it's they're badass at one thing. They're retired from their game and they're badass at that thing. If they were badass at everything, like every single multiple different, the whole idea of a Gary Stu is not that they're good at something. It's that they're better at everything than everyone else around them. That's the little bit of the, okay, then why do other characters exist? And it's kind of more frustrating as the surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Because so, how the story was set up and how the big plot moments were, I have a lot of surprise. It's exciting plot, but when it's solved in the, oh, actually, Viz trained this as a prince, didn't reveal that until now. That's the more thing. It just disconnects me from the character himself. Where it would have been more interesting, solved in different ways. Maybe he used someone else. Like, if he wasn't as skilled in everything, that's just, it just kind of disconnects me from the character a bit.
I see.
However, the other characters, all their hidden motivations and how they connect with each other, so much fun.
That's what I mean, though. I don't think his Gary Stu-ness took away from all those other characters, because all the side characters were propelled and had their own. Stood out. So if him being good at everything took away from the side characters, I would see that and agree more with like, oh yes, him doing all this good meant you didn't need the side characters, but it didn't draw away, it didn't draw their will in a way. Whereas just him, it's one of those tropes. Just I was using the retired badass as agreement where, you know, how you like to see him come out of show, like actually he's really good at the thing. And good points, like sure, our Gary Stu here is he's good at a lot of things. For me, it's that almost the wish fulfillment type of more YAS character that you see, like your Percy Jackson is a good example of this trope of a character. Go ahead.
I would almost say Percy Jackson isn't. Because Percy Jackson has people like Annabeth, who is better.
No, like a perfect example is Son of Neptune, Heroes of Olympus, where it's that whole trope happens in that book. Where we've seen him built up for five books of what he's done, and then Heroes of Olympus, he comes in and is like, nobody knows how badass Percy Jackson is, but we know how badass Percy Jackson is. It's one of those things. Yeah. But with this, I'm not disagreeing with he was good at a lot of things. It's just that's why I liked this character, and that's why he didn't. Because then we can agree at least on the side characters and having very clear motivations and being necessary to the story. I really don't think this took away from them at all.
No, he didn't. So. And that's why I thought the characters score overall good. I would say I would go neutral or disappointing if it was just grading Viz. Because I just didn't particularly care about his character. Like, I thought it was, his plot is fun, but I didn't like him personally.
Gotcha.
And there's some moments that are pretty good, but I'm looking forward to the next couple books. I'm sure I'm going to like Viz a lot more. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in this book, didn't connect as much with him.
Is it a good way to say you thought the author was at least trying to get you to think his struggles were more, like he was trying to give you attention of like, oh, is he or isn't he going to win the thing?
Yes.
And that's what you thought it was going for. And you're there
were multiple plot points.
Okay.
Where, oh, how is Viz going to get out of this? And it was, the answer was, Viz is already the best.
That's right.
And
that's
so
where
I'm just going like,
I see what you're saying there. So that's where I disagree with the, how is he going to get out of it, was the like the way he got out of it and the plot point it created, like the foundation game of not just beating, but how. That's what's interesting to me.
Which makes it an enjoyable plot for me, but not a very good character.
But
Do you get what I mean?
I get what you mean.
That's a fun plot moment, but takes away from my enjoyment of the character. It gets me to disconnect from him.
Because you were looking for, maybe not looking for the progression of Viz's character in that way, but cared more about that push and pull than you did about him being from a passive character to an active character.
Yeah, I cared about it by the end. Okay. I liked it. But it's just, it's a detractor. It doesn't mean I hate him.
Yeah, and I'm saying this at the same time of like, this isn't my favorite protagonist. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed him. Yeah. I really enjoyed him. But then the side characters elevate it even more for this book. With like, who's your favorite side character?
Calidus.
Calidus. Oh.
Best boy.
Best boy, Calidus.
Best boy, Calidus. Oh, best so good. Boy. Though I will be honest, I think one of the more charming ones, or charming is the wrong word, charismatic was Feridus? The no terrorist lady.
Let me see. It's Relusha. But her other name starts with an S. There's so many double names. Like this is also Diago.
Yeah.
So there's so many names.
I don't like it. Give me less names.
But you really liked Relusha, the villain.
She was such an intimidating villain.
Cunning.
Mainly just cold as ice. Just so many times of seems almost nurturing in some instances of going like, hey, Diago, we're here with you. We're trying to take down the empire that destroyed your family. Come on, work with us. We're going to help you out. And sort of empathize with them. But the minute she gets too much pushback, like there's an invisible line that Viz can cross. And then she just goes,
I'll 1 kill to 100, your family. Like, whoa.
I'll start killing your friends until you
actually
comply.
His family's dead, so it would be killing his friends.
Hey, you know that friend you just made 3 days ago? They're gonna die tomorrow if you don't do this.
Jesus.
Just like, and she just sounds so resigned to it. Like,
oh yeah,
I don't want to do it. You're making me do this. Why are you making me do this? But I will. And
yeah,
just cold blooded. And so I thought she was real
intimidating.
And real intimidating.
Yeah, and it's that kind of intimidation where a lot of villains can just be physically intimidating. I won't spoil too much, but in Red Rising, there's a villain that is just has nothing to do with them being stronger. It's just them as a character in person makes you shiver.
Yeah.
It's the Homelanders. It's, I love it. And another shout out to a couple characters like Veritas was, I always thought like, oh, Veritas, something's going on. He's too charming. It seems too superficial. He's really the villain, right? But by the end, he kind of gave Jai Sedai, the Patreon said this, he gives Dumbledore vibes. Doesn't he give some Dumbledore vibes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But also,
kills kids.
Kills a lot of kids.
Sends a lot. But here's the thing. Dumbledore also sacrificed Harry. Dumbledore's basically saying like, hey, he's got to kill Voldemort. Who gives a fuck? Dumbledore was nice and all, but still was willing to sacrifice Harry.
Still, it would be a little different if Dumbledore every single year was like, hey, Voldemort's in the Forbidden Forest. I'm going to send like 5 students in there every year and see if one of them comes back. Not one has come back in like 10-ish years.
Time to use the, what's that magic thing they created? The time loop?
The time watch.
Just take it back. Time watch it.
We have plenty of kids. Why do that to save some kids?
But no, Veritas gave that.
He kills a lot of kids.
Oh, yeah. But he also gives that charming exterior where I guess you think his motive is deeper into. You think his motive is worse than like Relusha that we're just talking about. Like,
yeah.
Villain. But turns
his
out.
His motive seems to be.
Ends justify the means is his motive. Where the ends of he's preventing the cataclysm and sending these kids in. Also, we don't know because maybe. The situation with the kids. Maybe it's like, I don't know how it's working with the kids, but maybe we'll find out the next book. Like the kids are coming to him, like to save the world. Like, so who knows? It could be less malicious than we think. I don't know.
Could be more honest about the situation. Maybe he is honest.
Like, hey, this is a death. This you
You're
could be
probably
going into
going
your
to
death,
die, but we need to say who knows.
Yeah,
still not great.
No.
But
I imagine he would be worse.
It seems like it's not much of like he's not doing it for a power play.
No,
at least. Solely a power play. He's doing it to try and stop a cataclysmic event.
Right.
So,
what did you think about a character like Aquia?
Oh, I liked Aquia. It's just,
or you know the character I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah,
about.
No. Yeah. Fun betrayal, thinking about whose side is she actually on. It's great.
Yeah, I liked seeing her perspective of. The spectacular thing about this book and these characters is every other character had their own story. Yeah. It wasn't just, you know how Viz seemed less important, like you weren't totally into Viz. Mm-hmm. I could see any of these other characters having their own book.
Sure.
Their entire story going on, because even Acquia's entire book is the whole time she was the person there with this when the Colosseum scene happened. Those who haven't read the book, the Colosseum scene, where in part one we were talking about earlier, where boom, terrorists destroying tens of thousands of people, Viss comes, kills the terrorist. Well, actually, terrorist kills himself. But essentially, yeah. Viss looks like Viss kills a terrorist. So the only other person that was there with him was Acquia. And so Acquia sees this, and Acquia sees him in, he sees him Gary stewing, essentially, where he's so good at everything. And that's also why I love Viss, just how good he is at everything, because if he wasn't so good at everything, then there would be no reason for all these people to pull in different directions. It wouldn't make sense for the military to want to pull and use him if people didn't do the Colosseum, or for Ulysaur not to want him as this prodigy, or for the Academy and Veritas not to see the potential in him. So him doing this let even someone like Acquia shine these side characters, where she was thinking, reasonably so, that, hey, this Gary Stew,
he's cheating somehow.
He's using Will or something. So we think she's suspicious about something else, like she's figuring out he's from Seuss and his identity. But what really comes to fruition is she thinks he's cheating and using the Will, which you can't blame her. Because by the time that's revealed, she feels so guilty. Like, oh my God, I was certain. You're literally a god at everything. This is impossible. So Acquia is literally you going, stop Gary stewing. And then he goes, no. And he wasn't even using Will, but just I could literally see a book from her perspective on how she's going to this academy. This crazy guy saves the Colosseum, and she's looking into his past and trying to figure out, oh, who's he connected? Is he using Will? And then comes to her fruition. But every character has their own thing going on. Veritas, his whole thing with the cataclysm. Ulysaur, who I loved, the one thing I loved about Ulysaur is he's one note, and that might be bad for some people when you hear one note, but he is obsessed over his brother's death. Mm-hmm. And when you see what that obsession does to him, to the point of his motivation seems like he's doing this for the military and religion have these conflicts.
Yeah.
He's kind of hiding it at first, but then more and more as you see the obsession, how deep it is, of him talking with his parents, of when Viss walks back into the room and like it's the topic they're talking about, of it, his parents are saying, let it go. He's been dead for 6 years. It was a suicide. Like, it was not a conspiracy, Richard. It wasn't. Not everything's a conspiracy.
But what if it is? I listened to a podcast about it, and they said
the frogs
turning the freaking frogs gay. The frog.
So I just loved. I couldn't not love the character so much, because it is so difficult for a book to go like each one has their own story. That's incredible. Each one has their own motivation and story. I could see this being written from all of them, and that's got to say something. And the broship between Eden and Cassidus and Viss. And just, oh, lovely. And Amissa, the relationship between Amissa, you understand why Amissa loves, why she likes Viss, because, oh, this guy who saved the Colosseum.
Let's see. Tall, attractive, national hero that saved tens of thousands of lives, good at just about everything, charming to talk to, apparently, and funny. Man, I can't think of a reason why she
exactly
would be romantically interested in him.
I can name things for Richard. He has a podcast.
Got a podcast.
He's got a stable job.
That is true.
He's going to the gym a lot. You're getting into shape.
Better.
And you're looking good from that. And
thanks, bud.
That's all you get. And now why you shouldn't. Now what?
Hey. Was a negative. I had no hair. I'm growing more hair.
Ah.
So that, you know, hey, get in early.
And he's a great cuddler. What?
Huh?
So I love these characters.
Yeah.
Love them. Do you want to go on the plot?
I do.
Okay. Plot, what did you give plot out of 5 stars?
I give it a 4.25.
A really great plot. I gave it a 4.75. Really? Nearly floored me. Freaking really spectacular plot. Gobbledygook. I loved it.
There's several moments in. So it's really strange that I kind of have a interesting mix, because there are some moments in the plot that I think did floor me, but then there are other sections that I was a little disconnected or just not as interested in.
Okay.
And so it was a weird mix, and then because several times where I was not as interested, I felt like it was a plot point ripped from a different book, and it felt a little jarring of how, and I was just reminded of how similar it was to other things. It was done its own way. It's not...
Oh, like, can I give an example, bad. Maybe?
You,
why I didn't give it the five? Is it the dog scene?
That's one of them.
The dog at the end is like, that dog saves him, the wolf. That wolf saves him a lot.
It saved him once.
Yeah.
Twice. Twice. But yet, that was a Assassin's Apprentice moment, and plenty of other scenes. Like, plenty of other books do the same thing.
But we did say before, plot was the best category, and we're starting to dig on the plot. What is that all about? I know. About?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Those are a... That's I'm it. Giving that slight detractor of why I'm not giving it a five.
Mm-hmm.
Because the positives are real great. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I had several moments, just like you. I was mocking a little bit. But I was also cheering when Viz was beating that bully's head into the ground, and then dropped the faulty helmet at the corrupt teacher's feet. It's like, you may want to check that equipment again. Think it's a little broken. Then goes off. It's great. Mm-hmm. Now I was cheering with you. It was great.
Okay, good.
Great moments.
Okay.
So I had plenty of those fun, exciting moments. I thought just how it was woven together of like me trying to piece together the mystery elements of, hey, what is this magic system? What do these ruins mean? What is this cataclysm that kind of all these different sides are kind of hinting at and some connection to? Great how it all comes together. Love the maze. Wonderful. All that's great. And then, of course, epilogue.
Jesus.
If we're talking about plot.
Jesus.
Oh, Lord. Like, you end the book, and you go, what an interesting end to the book. I'm excited to see how Viz, the censor, is going to do. Mm-hmm. Like that, okay, he lost an arm, but you know what? He's going to try and cover up his past. He's going to figure out this mystery. He's going to... Cool. Excited to see where that goes. Then epilogue starts and going, hey, this is, like, the last chapter. This feels like we're repeating something. Am I... reading like a mistake? No. Alternate dimension going on. So now we have a parallel dimension, mm-hmm. Viz. And you go, that's a weird epilogue. Now I'm really curious. And then third ending with another parallel dimension. Something completely different, crazy happens. And now we left at the end of the book of, wait a minute. We have three main character Vizes now in alternate dimensions that they're all going to have their own plot points and their whole stories. What? Excuse me?
And we know Carrier's alive, the brother's alive in this other dimension.
No. James, when it comes to epilogues, he's the king of epilogues. The absolute king. Book three.
Of
Lucanus is the best epilogue ever read, period.
Ever written.
Best epilogue. This man can cook. He can cook an epilogue.
Mm.
He knows.
Okay.
I'm more excited for the epilogue than the acting.
Just skip to the epilogue.
Just skip to the epilogue. It's going to be more exciting.
Some people do that. Oh.
Oh, God.
Blasphemy. But this ended at such a... three visits.
Yeah.
And you had a great prediction. You have a very interesting way you think that's going to go. Do you want to say that?
Yeah. I think there each PO, we're going to get in the next book, this is my theory, that we're going to follow all three POVs of Viz in a different dimension, timeline, alternate version. And each of them is kind of going to explore a different aspect of this world. I think the first Viz, the one that lost an arm, is not really going to go into the combat. He's now going to be a lot less physically active, so we're not going to get the action from him, but we're going to get the political intrigue of him trying to weave his way through the empire, the political system, hiding his identity, trying to remove records or plant a fake record of himself, and just him figuring out all the different angles and avoiding all of the puppet masters that he's cut off.
Right.
We're going to get that political intrigue. Then we have one that's with the brother of, what's his name?
Ulasaur.
We're probably going to get some magic. So we're a lot more connected to the base level magic. There's a hidden magic system we know that I don't think it's directly connected to Will. So I think we're going to see something there. That we're going to get, I have no idea what the middle one is, what kind of plot, but I imagine we're going to get different plot directions for each of them. And then toward the end of that book or beginning of the third book, all three versions of Viz are going to merge back into one character. And so we're going to have like superpower Viz of he's learned the magic from one dimension. He's gained the political intrigue and, you know, learned these other things of the system. We're just going to have an amalgamation super Viz by the end of the third.
Super Viz.
That's my guess.
I think it was Kendall that added on to that saying in each of the dimensions, he could be in the religion in one, government the other, and military the other. Kind of exploring each of those aspects that are very clearly set up in this book.
Yeah. And thing is, it's going to be cool to see a character that we had a whole book with them, and we know his personality, we know his character. And then we're going to go into book two and see how that character diverges. Like, how does the same person change over different...
Oh, fascinating.
Different plot points in his life. So, like, by the end of book two, are we going to have three different characters that the events in their life has drastically changed them? And how their personality is going to be different.
Right.
I find that's going to be so cool to read.
That's going to be so cool. It ends on a point where I'm almost upset I read this now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those epilogues, you start the next book right away.
Oh, yeah.
You start. That's it. And we talked a lot about plot when we were going spoiler free too. Because this is the whole point of this book of what will make you love this or not. Why you probably gave it the 4.25 overall as a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's the plot carried it with just, even if there was less interesting points, it always threw you for a loop. There was always another stake to be added. There's always another motivation you didn't see coming. And why we were comparing it at first to that Red Rising, another good comparison to give to it is that not only is it the Roman theme, not only is it your main character, the anger. Has that anger, but also it's written first person point of view, present tense, I believe. Yeah, first person present tense, just like Red Rising is. And where Red Rising has that more guttural, fast pacedness to it, this kind of throws you in for those jarring cuts. And
it's sudden, like stop start type deal.
But yeah.
Kind of goes along, it's not super fast, but then all of a sudden, drop of a hat, super
reveal.
Super big reveal, big action moment, super fast pace, and then slows down in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, you know, constant action.
Right. It's
surprising.
Yeah, it's woven in so that you can build up assumptions of where you think these characters are going and what you think's going to happen, and then Colosseum happens.
Oh no! And frequently,
and also
he writes the plot in a way where you think you know where it's going to go, and then the character does the opposite. Several times in the story, like it's almost he builds up the trope and sets it up going like, yeah, you've read this story before, and then he does something else, and that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
The first one was where terrorist lady comes in and you think, oh, it basically sabotages the balloon that they're riding on and plans to take him away, and she reveals that he knows who he truly is, and it's like, hey, you're not ready for this academy. I'm going to train you personally, get you ready. And, you know, a little training arc here first. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to ransom you back. And then you're going to go to the academy. It's going to be Gucci. We're going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and so you as the reader kind of go, oh, okay, that's exciting. A little training arc here before they're, fair enough. And it really does seem like he's going to go with her. And then he just says no. It's like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to go see this other guy.
But why that subversion works so perfectly, Rich, and why I love this plot. A subversion works if it's actually a logical way to subvert it. Because you can't just subvert and go, hey, I was going to cook you eggs, but instead I gave you spaghetti. Like, whoa, I was putting eggs into my mouth and I just got spaghetti texture. Spaghetti's good, but you did not build up to spaghetti. That kind of works
perfect
as an
analogy.
I think so. I'm using that again. I'm writing a book called The Egg to Spaghetti Theory. It teeters my totter. That's all I'm saying. It's a good balance. The eggs and spaghetti being opposites.
By the way, I was told before this video that we need to segue it in there. I couldn't figure out a way. But buy Teeter My Totter merch. We have t-shirts and things.
I did not tell you to say that, but thank you.
But
no, I didn't.
He did. He said, Rich, you got to plug our merch. We're not selling enough t-shirts.
I don't know if they'll believe you right now. I hope they do. Thank you, though. By Teeter Matata over the democracy is cringe, though. This is the whole book is about democracy is cringe, so I get it. If this episode you get those t-shirts, makes sense. I'm going to do that to you in future episodes. Richard made me plug his shirts. That was smart. What was I saying? Oh, eggs to spaghetti.
No, you can forget about that.
The subversion. No, I'm holding on to that. Literally, let me cook. Okay, so the whole subversion of expectations of this is set up as this passive character who doesn't want to choose it and pick a side. Mm-hmm. And so when that subversion comes of, you expect, oh, he's going to go down the arc because I've seen this story happen that this many times go down this way where it's the joins the revolutionary group, huzzah. No, it goes back to training arc or going back to with Illicer. And you go, whoa, didn't expect that. But also, oh, that goes right in line with what he should do. It doesn't, the subversion works when it tricks you for a moment and thinking, hey, look, here's this crown jewel over here, but really it's been on this path the whole time. So it looks, it's such a genius way of plotting this out. It's so, so good and so smart of how he does this. Because then when you get to a subversion, it subverts, but also stays with the tropes a lot. Where this is a pure dark, it's an academia. Mm-hmm. You've also seen stories like this, but it seems new and fresh enough to where you can get the people that enjoy the trope so much, but also, oh, this is new and fresh and exciting. When Patrick Leo was reviewing this, he said it was the best academia book since Name of the Wind. Which,
that's a low bar.
Unfortunately, you don't like Name of the Wind. But coming from Patrick, it's a high bar. you're going to have to debate him after. Oh, after I read the book, we should have him on to discuss that book. That would be cool. And Mike, because Mike doesn't like it, so we could have two on two.
Ooh, a little two on two. You're assuming you're gonna like it?
I'm gonna force myself to like it.
Oh, okay.
Because I have to for content. I have to, because if I don't like it, then
thing is, push and pull. I feel like learn things about you from this book. You may like it more than me. Mm. Maybe. I'm pretty sure you won't like it. Pretty sure.
You think I'll give it, but like a 2.5?
It's my guess. Okay. Mainly because of that ending.
Okay.
It's such a disappointing ending.
No, not spoiling anything, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not spoiling anything, but that was most of my
anger
was the ending.
Okay.
I actually didn't hate my time while reading it. I was just kind of expecting stuff and then realizing that's the end of the book. That's it. I hate you. Watch.
I can't wait to read it. That's gonna be a fun time. But
he's a tease, is what I'm saying. He teased me enough and then just never delivered, and I got blue balls at the end of that book. I hated it.
Well, you and Mike versus me and Patrick and I. We're just assuming they'll come on. We're like, oh yeah, just
Well, why not?
No problem. Let's book it. And next drop everything. Me and Sando versus you and Pierce, right?
Yeah.
Just have him on. Yeah. So I just wanted to emphasize masterclass and some plot stuff there. Just it shows why following with the trope but also subversion just ties it so well. Do you want to go on to world building?
Yeah.
World building, what'd you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 3.
A flat neutral 3. Interesting.
Yeah.
I gave it, just put mine in there, I give it a 4-star, so I think it's great.
I'm assuming that this can change much later on, but I really didn't feel that the society itself was really alive. Great characters, plot, all the stuff, but the history of the empire, just how everything functions, like, I'm pretty neutral on all of it.
You have some good things, some bad, some
yeah, but I wouldn't particularly say the world is good. Also, the magic system, I know he can cook. I know he can do it. I know the magic system is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We were barely given any of it here.
I mean, Vist doesn't use any.
Right? Yeah. So I'm not really judging the magic system at all. Like, it's teased a little bit, but not much.
Okay, fair enough.
So I know that will improve in the next book. Fair. I know it, but for this one, I'm pretty neutral on it.
Okay.
Why do you say it's great?
Is that of the categories, it's lower than my characters and my plot and emotional impact and thought-provokingness. It's higher than prose, I'll say that. But it's the lower one of those, so I get your point. It wasn't unbelievably realized, like, oh, I could see everything, because a lot of it relies on some Roman tropes that you can, oh, okay, this is generic, this area here and here and here, so I get that. I think that the magic system itself, where although I didn't deeply understand the hard lines to it, that no, I didn't know it cut off here. I think the concept and also the execution of will in this book and what it does, kind of more for my thought provokingness as well, but how the structure of society works with pyramid structures and how the bottom are ceding to the higher ups to give them enough power. And I don't understand all of the intricacies to that other than the details that are given, such as like the elderly, kind of there's elderly pyramids where they're given less important functions because once they die out, it cripples that part of the pyramid in society and they're no longer able to do this. So they have to give the more, you know, the retirees get a different pyramid than these. And we're, like you said, in book two, we're going to get the censor from this, and we're going to find out probably a lot more about how those pyramids work and what actually will does. A lot of the academia portion was talking about how there's a conditional will and all these elements of we were learning the, it's like reading about a magic system rather than seeing it applied. So I see that a lot where we kind of, it was like we were studying it and not seeing the use because of Viz's character.
We studied some of it and then kind of we started studying it and then he moved on like, oh yeah, I got the answers right. And like, well, what was the answer? Like there's some theory stuff and we passed over. So I know it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. It's just this book, I'm just not giving it that high of a score.
Fair enough. Yeah. I still do think it's great because I did enjoy the magic system and I liked the Katian Republic. Their system as a whole was interesting. And I when they went to Seuss, I liked the little tidbits that we got of more the culture that even from 3-4 years ago that we get to see, like his the old shop owner or the the guy who the culinary, the chef. Why did it take me that long to say chef? It's getting toward the end of the episode, you know, we get loopy. So the chef character or his old the servant his old tutor that was there to show there was still that life and spark in the nation. I couldn't see Seuss, so geographically I don't seem island nation area or island Hawaii. I don't know, fill in the blank there, but I have a lot of the questions it led for me. So not a lot of answers, but I'm questioning about the cataclysm. I'm looking at like this happened 300 years ago where I'm questioning about the history and I'm very curious and fascinated to where it's going. And so it did enough for me to go like, I want, when I was reading this book, was I lost in the world? And was I escaping? Yes. I was thoroughly going, okay, this will system, like I'm on board. Okay. What's this about? Then every time like the pyramid was explained and how the will is seated and how conditional will works. I was going like, oh, what's that mean? Oh, okay. You didn't give me every answer there. Give me a little bit, not much. But now I want to see where it goes next. So it just kept me really engaged. And I do like it's more conceptually I like it than I do seeing where the hard lines are. So yeah. I could see myself with the future books. If it does even better book two, I could probably lower this one by 0.25, 0.5. But I just really enjoyed it. I was immersed. So
it didn't give me enough to be really immersed in the world this time. But I trust the author. I know it'll get there.
Great. Want to go on to pros?
Yep.
What'd you give pros out of 5 stars?
I gave 3.5. I think it was good.
Is this our first on the money one? Or did we get... Because I also gave it 3.5.
Yeah.
Good.
Good.
Good pros.
Good pros. I will say, this is the most improvement from his previous series. Like, that was a thing he was missing in the first one. From...
Lacanus Trilogy.
Lacanus Trilogy. His prose needed some work. He did well, but like the first book.
Let's say little his rough. Let's say his little rough his read. Prose in the previous trilogy was a con.
It was. And here's the thing. Yes, I got just you. Yes.
I thought it was cute.
It's also cute because you actually made a pun in the world. The magic system in Lacanus is called Khan.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
With a K. K-A-N.
Oh, that's even cooler. You elevated it. Man, I got to read that book.
Yeah.
I got to read it seriously. Okay.
But a big problem with amateur writers, self-included, basically everyone, is it's hard to do multiple things at the same time. I've talked about this before, but with Lacanus, book one, it was very much separated of, okay, here's the plot moment. We're going to talk about plot, and now here's dialogue moment to talk about the characters. And now chunk where we're going to describe world. And it was all so separate. So there was long chunks where it was like just describing things and info dumps. And it's like, all right, come on. Where he does a great job in this book of actually integrating things together. And so we're describing the world while we're having a conversation with characters where we learn a little bit about the character's motivation deep down while also seeing more about the world. And so we learn, and then also while doing this, sometimes we're pushing the plot along. So it's mixed together quite well, which is what basically any good published author nowadays is doing. Like, that's kind of the bar we got to do. I don't know. That's really it. So he does that here.
Can I clarify? Clarify. I think you told me this. Wasn't the first Lacanus book self-published?
Mm-hmm.
And then got picked up by a traditional publisher?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. So he started self-publishing and then became a corporate machine.
He did.
Mm.
He sold out.
We will never sell out here on To the Ramble. Check out our affiliate link on Amazon.com to buy The Will of the Many. You know how much we make fun of Amazon and put their affiliate link down in the description?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And you know, we make like literally $2 on that. It's not like we make anything crazy.
We could put something else there.
We really could.
We could do a different thing.
Like a smiley. We don't even have to put it down there.
Well, no, we could put like, there's books.com. There's other sites.
Okay, we'll look into that. We'll look into that. Okay.
We already don't do Audible.
Yeah.
Like we do Libro.fm. Like I'll promote that stuff. That's great. I don't like promoting Audible. Not yet. The only time it's acceptable to go to Audible is when you're picking up Dungeon Crawler Carl, because it's the only place it's available. And I hate them for doing that to me.
But the books are too damn good to refuse.
Yeah, basically. Mm.
So the pros, I could leave us with some quotes, some of the best quotes from the book.
Hit me.
The top one on Goodreads quotes is, "Silence is a statement, Diago. Inaction picks a side. And when those lead to personal benefit, they are complicity." One of the thought-provoking messages that we expanded upon there.
My girl, the villainess, the terrorist lady.
"Nervousness means there's a fear to be faced ahead, Diago. The man who is never nervous never does anything hard. The man who is never nervous never grows." I like that a lot.
I think that's also the terrorist lady.
Is that?
It may be.
No. I think that's his father. Oh. From like a flashback scene, I think.
Maybe you're right.
Or
I think it's all the terror. All the good lines. You know what's great? All these terrorist lady.
Just to show you how convoluted this book is, each quote could be from the terrorists or the hierarchy. We don't know.
Yeah, but that also is a negative on prose. You know what I mean? Of like characters having a unique voice of like a lot of these lines, many different
could have been other people, right?
Yeah.
Which is, but we're not giving the prose crazy good. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of a difference of with Joe Abercrombie, you don't confuse a Glockta quote. Never. Like, that's why Glockta's Glockta, and only Glockta could say Glockta things, and it's, you know who says what.
That's why Sanderson, to me, gets some credit for prose. Like, I know that's a Kaladin quote. I know that's Dalinar. So he goes from the 3-5 to the 4 for me. That's, I love you, Sando. Then here's another one. "There comes a point in every man's life where he can rail against the unfairness of the world until he loses, or he can do the best in it, remain a victim, or become a survivor."
Yeah, just like how after every video, I survive you.
Actually, the next quote is, "Death is only meaningless if it does not change us, Viss." And I think the death of every episode changes us.
Nah.
See y'all next time.
Bye, y'all.